Thank you, Jay. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Jay. Good morning, everyone. There we go. I think I've been pastor now for 3 years, and I still don't have you guys trained. I get it. It's the morning. We're all still waking up. It's only 11:07, so I get that. I'm grateful to be here today. I'm thankful for the opportunity to gather here. Earlier this week, we had a shift bid at work, and I wasn't certain if, it's a seniority bid, so I just never know where you're going to land on it. And I was hoping to be able to stay at the station I'm at, the shift that I'm on, and fortunately it worked out that way. So my biggest fear was being switched on shifts and end up having to work 4 Sundays in a row or something like that. And fortunately that didn't happen. I got a crew that I've bid to that I feel very positive about, good Mormon captain and engineer there who he and I have done some studying together and things like that. I'm pretty excited about this next year. And so, but I'm grateful to be here today. And I have a message. You see, I was super excited last night when I put the rest of this together. I think this is super cool. I got a guy ripping open his shirt, and you see the title of my sermon here, Mankind Needs a Hero. And I've been thinking about this throughout the last several weeks. I'm going to refer just a few times to something. I've been listening to a podcast of Jordan Peterson as he's done a presentation on the Old Testament. And it's very long, and it's very psychologically in-depth. And he doesn't approach it from a religious standpoint necessarily. He talks about the concepts and how they're true for mankind and what they do and all, but he doesn't necessarily make any spiritual statements. So I've listened to it just considering that. But as I've been listening to it, I got a page full of notes on my phone that I write down that just things that I'm thinking about and ways I hadn't considered I think 5 episodes into it at like 3 hours apiece, and he's still in the creation or something like that. I mean, it's tedious, and get a little smoke coming from my head sometimes trying to consider it. But man, it's really piqued a lot of thoughts in my mind. And one of these things that he was talking about was this concept of heroism, and it led me down a line today that I want to present to you this first Sunday morning sermon of January 2024. And like I said last year, this quick, and it's going to be December, and maybe I'll be preaching the last sermon. This year is over. It's already over. It's going to be so fast. And but as we're looking forward, I want us to just think. I really hope as a local that we put together that within your own mind, just like how Joel had preached and talked about a goal, something, a plan to go forward. And I really want to talk about some of those things today. So we'll get going. I have here pictures full of heroes. And as we look at some of these, we can maybe pick out a couple of them that we know. Obviously, we've got Superman up there, who's my personal favorite. The Man of Steel. In the bottom, would it be left corner? We got anybody know who that one is? The red one in the bottom left corner? Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Ant-Man. Yeah. Ant-Man is your hero there. Captain America right above him. We have Captain Shamrock. Right? She's Captain Shamrock. There's three of them there. Anybody know who the statue guy is? This old Mesopotamian hero, Gilgamesh. He's holding a lion that he killed and a snake that he killed. Is who Gilgamesh is holding. And then I got two more, and for some reason my notes aren't showing up here. And I don't know why. Let me see if I can get my notes to show up here. Because it makes it difficult for me to see. There we go. I got Captain Shamrock. So the guy in the middle, the middle top, He's actually from India. He's an Indian hero named Inspector Steele. And then right below that, with the thing of the nose that Gordon wore for us during COVID, that's a Russian hero named Major Grom. Major Grom is this guy who was, everything that he did was full of virtue, and he was so by the book, legal, law, everything like that. That was his heroism, was as he went after criminals, and he would never be swayed in the least bit. So I think I've touched on all of them. These are just some of these things. We look around, and these are these hero stories. Marvel has done a ton of them, all that sort of stuff. But there's something I just want us to think about. There is an archetypal story. Now, that word archetypal is kind of a strange one. It's from archetype, and an archetype is an original model or a type after which other things are patterned, or it's a foundational thing, or it's an example of an ideal. And so the of a hero is something that has been established throughout all of time. Mankind has recognized this, that there is bad in the world, and mankind has longed for and yearned for and hoped for something, someone who would overcome. And so I have here, you know, the story of a hero facing villains, unfathomable dangers, insurmountable odds, overcoming pain and injury, obtaining victory at the last moment through is something that extends through all societies throughout all of known history. There are these stories. It's hero stories. It's something that's foundational to mankind. And it's something that in every society, there is stories of these characters who went and they fought insurmountable odds. This last year, in the last few months, you've watched hundreds of TV shows or movies about this very thing. From your, obviously, from your Marvel series and stuff like that, to if you watch an NCIS or anything like that, right? You're looking at a hero story. We're going to look at the CSI. We're going to, you know, the ridiculous quickly discovering of evidence and finding out who people are and go and get the bad guy and all that. This is the story. It's a hero story. And we desire. You've watched hundreds of movies and TV shows about it in the last few months. It's a story that we continue to repeat because mankind needs a hero. They need to have a hero. They need to believe that there's a hero, and they need to believe that there is something that they can emulate of a hero. The story of heroism is highlighted in sports. We love these underdog stories, and the underdog isn't necessarily somebody who's completely incapable. It's just that they're facing insurmountable odds. In football, you know, this you look for this, or you know, we're getting ready to come up to March, and in college basketball, as you go into the March Madness, you know, you're looking for, they call them a Cinderella story, right? The lowest ranking shouldn't have even made it into that final tournament basketball team. And when they set together the rankings of these basketball teams, right? And they say, okay, all of these teams are invited in, and they break them into brackets. And the team that has the worst record but still was in there is going to play the very best team. And so when that very worst team, they're not bad players, they can score and all that, they earn their way there, but they're facing insurmountable odds. They're facing the team that's going to send 10 people to the NBA. And when they beat them, they call it a Cinderella story, and they're heroes, right? They overcome all these odds. It's something that's highlighted in sports, and we, you know, our society lifts that up. A hero, just kind of this easy definition, is a person noted for their feats of courage or nobility of purpose, especially one who has risked or sacrificed his or her life. Probably know that. And it's the story of Christ, and it's the bedrock story of a hero that was before anything else. And if you remember back, if you were here or you listened to when I preached on Christmas Eve that morning, we talked about this, that the gift of Christ, the hero story, was laid out in the garden to Eve. The Lord said to her, you know, they're getting ready to boot them out because they made this mistake, and now they were going to be under the influence of sin and of Satan in the world. And the Lord told him, so, but from you is going to come someone who is going to put Satan beneath his feet. And so that the hero story of Christ was laid out before everything else. So I just want us to think about these things. And I'm going to start now, and I'm going to look at, I have all my scriptures up here. And I'm going to read, we're going to start here with Luke chapter 2, and I'm going to start in verse 9. And this is the story, we read it Christmas time. Joel read it, I think, last week, or when he preached last, which is why I was kind of where my mind went when I was thinking about this. And so this is the story of Christ's birth, and here are these shepherds out there in the field. And it says, "And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid." And I want to break this down just for a second. Just kind of think about this. These guys are out there in the field, and they're taking care of their flocks, and it's nighttime, and all of a sudden, this incredibly bright light. Strong says that word glory. It's this light that is very apparent. And the root word of it comes from the word seem. So it seemed to them that the Lord was right there in front of them. And it says, because of this, all of a sudden they're sitting there listening to the sheep do whatever it is. Maybe they're chitter-chatting, and all of a sudden, boom, there's this light there. And they're looking, and what is going on? And it says they were sore afraid. And that word sore means big. They were big afraid. They were just a little bit afraid. What is going on? You know, why was it? Well, you know, there's this thought that the appearance of a heavenly being showing up, it was that you were going to die. That was this Old Testament thought. And because it's, you know, that if a man sees God, he's going to die. And all that. So these shepherds, as they saw all this, they're like, oh, we're done. We're done. And you know, so the angel comes and shows, and they are big time frightened. Because what is this? What's it about? What's going to happen to us? You know, am I going to die here? Whatever it is. You know what? I made this mistake last week, and I didn't get to the temple and do what I was supposed to. All these things are in their mind. And the angel says to them, "Fear not." So the angel says, "And fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people." And, you know, you guys know, I think, and we're going to talk about this tonight in our town hall as we kind of talk about some stuff for the future. I think it's really important when we're looking at scriptures to take a look at the words and kind of dissect and think about it. And so I look at this, and the angel says to them, as they're sitting there thinking we are fixing to die, and the angel begins to talk and says, "Don't be afraid." And he says, "There is a reason." Four says, "There's a reason." "There's a reason." And he says, "Behold." And behold, it was as if he was saying, "Look, don't be afraid, because look, I'm bringing you good tidings of great joy." That word "behold," saying to look, it's an imperative action. It means it's telling someone to do something. "Look, I'm bringing you great joy. There's no reason to be afraid." And he introduces them to the coming of the hero of Jesus Christ. They were going to walk up, and they were going to be eyewitnesses of it. So we just kind of, you know, I'm laying this groundwork of some of these things I just want us to think about. As I was listening to this particular podcast, he went on a note about talking about fears and things. And he made this statement that I've been just chewing on for about 2 weeks now. And he was talking about how that, you know, Jordan Peterson says, "I took my son to see a movie." And he says, "My son was too young for this movie, and the movie was scary." And he says, "What I decided was," he said, I decided I'm not going to tell him not to be scared, because there are things worthy of being afraid of." He says, "But instead, I told him, keep your eye on the hero. Watch the hero." So, you know, you go through all this, and he says, there's stuff there that's going to cause you to fear. But watch what the hero does. Pay attention to him. How does he deal with all of these things? What is it? What is the story that in this movie, what is the story trying to tell you to do of how the hero is going to overcome things that are frightening, that bring you fear? And boy, I've just been thinking about that the last couple weeks. And I've been thinking about it because there are these things in life, and we can't take away from them. And I know we're going to look at some scriptures that says, you know, God says to fear not and don't be fearful and all that. But I don't think it means that we don't have some sort of apprehension of something. I don't believe that it doesn't, that it means that we're never supposed to have some anxiety about something going on. Because as we're going to look, you know, Christ had some of those things. But what we're called to do as we're in this human condition and as we find ourselves faced with challenges and all of these things is to look towards the hero. Look towards the hero. How did the hero address these things? And so I sat down and I thought about, well, what are some of these things that we might be afraid of? Or we might be afraid about? Every single one of us has these things. And I'm going to lay out a list of them and just talk about them. And of these, you'll probably share most of them. Some of them you won't. You know, some of you guys, and you might think about it, we have these fears we're afraid of. We're concerned about physical dangers to our health or to our family or our friends. You know, how many of us have sat and thought about that? How many of you guys have scoured WebMD to try to figure out what terrible disease you've been plagued with because your nose hurts or whatever it is, right? We want to know because I'm afraid and I want to figure out how to fix it. You know, we worry about these things. I worry about, you know, when I send my family off driving somewhere. Yesterday, my wife and my daughter, and I think Deb was in there, some guy rear-ended them in my car. Fortunately, it just scratched the bumper. It wasn't too bad. But, you know, these are things I worry about. I don't want anything to happen to my family. And sometimes it's these fears that can be very great. How many of us are afraid of being alone? A lot of us are probably afraid of being alone, right? Physically alone, right, Zane? You got your thumb up. That's a fear Zane has, huh? Yep, we have this fear of being alone. We have fears about decisions that we have no choice but to make because there's uncertain futures. Right? These are things that we have anxiety about. We worry about them. We'd rather not face them. We wish they would just go away. The repercussions of it bring us to sometimes just paralyzed with fear. This is part of being a human, right? Who's afraid when a cop gets behind them while they're driving? Even when I was a cop, I didn't like it when cops got behind me on the freeway. I'm like, oh my goodness, I had a ticket written to me by my own department once. I had to pay, I think, $300 and go to traffic school because of it. Now I hope when they see my fire department Maltese sticker there that they pass me by. But yeah, even when I was a cop, I got afraid when the police were behind me while driving. I don't want a ticket. It's going to cost me money. It's going to do all this sort of stuff. We have some of these fears. Who's ever been called in your boss's office? You have this fear. My department now, they do this really cool thing. If my battalion chief or anybody above that calls, they typically do this. They'll address it right away. Hey, I need to talk with you. You're not in trouble. Oh, good. Thank goodness. And if they don't say that, you're like, oh, no. Right? You have these fears of it. Why? Because there's something that's unknown that potentially could happen. Right? And this is rational. We have these concerns. How many has this fear? Prophecies of times of turmoil and danger. Right? Or we can even look at our world right now. Right? All this stuff's going on. The Middle East is a tinderbox. I would say it's more than that. I think there's a little fire already burning there. And what's the right amount of fuel to go on it until it starts really going off? Well, you know, these are things we might be afraid of. Some of these prophecies of times of turmoil and danger. Who has fears about time? Am I going to have enough time? Am I going to live long enough to do what I want or what I hope to do? There's this, there is a date, an age that is emblazoned in my mind that will I live longer than my dad? I'm 9 years from that. And I wonder, well, if in 9 years, I get 51 as my dad, will I have, if that were the day, would I have accomplished all the things that I need to do. Your time keeps marching steadily forward, and we're probably concerned about that, right? Snakes continue to be the number one fear of people throughout every year. My mom is terrified of airplanes. I remember maybe one time, maybe twice, flying with my mom. I love flying. And it was the most stressful, terrible time. My arm hurt when we were done because my mom would say, I just need to hold your hand or something. And every tiny little bump, she'd scream and squeeze. And it was terrifying to her. Still is, huh? Yeah. Yeah. There was a flight she took one time, and she was having trouble. And the stewardess said, please drink some alcohol. They will give you anything. It's on the house. Let's get you drunk so that you stop freaking people out here, right? And snakes continue to be people's number one fear every year, right? With good reason, right? I mean, a snake, that rattlesnake's out here, they'll bite you. But living as a Christian in this current time, one of these fears we probably have. And, you know, I want us to think about this, that fear is not necessarily a terrible emotion. There's a lot of things that fear should make us aware, right? Yeah, you have some of these fears in your life, and what should it do? You know, you pay attention to what we're afraid of. Where's it at? What does it look like? How do I identify it? How do I avoid it? Fear is not necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, we pay attention to those things that we're afraid of. And I just thought for a second, I said, you know, I wrote in my notes here, should we be afraid of God's judgment? That's something that's interesting. And I say probably we ought to be. Something that we pay a lot of attention to. So I really, where is it at? And that's the first question mark I have here. Well, it's at the judgment throne of God that is unavoidable. Unavoidable. What does it look like? God's judgment. Pure. Pure and complete. Considering things that we're not able to consider. And how do I avoid it? How do I avoid a negative you just make efforts to be prepared for it. If I have this knowledge that there is something coming, I do my best to be prepared for it. Fear is not a terrible emotion. It drives us to do things, and it ought to. And here you see, this is a story of this father, and he's looking at his sons, and he's got four of them, and two of them are absolute knuckleheads. And he says to him, my soul is rent with anguish because of you, and my heart's pained. I fear that you'll be cast off forever. And, you know, as Lehi, as he's thinking about this, he spends a significant amount of time warning his sons, man, you cannot keep doing these things. His fear for them motivated him to do something. And here in Alma, you know, this is a verse to me, is there's reasonable things to be concerned of. So I say, and you come and fear not, lay aside every sin which doth easily beset you, which bind you down to destruction. So sin is what binds us down to destruction. If we lay it aside, we don't have any reason to fear, right? And so fear is something, and we look at it, and it should be a warning to us, makes us aware and all of that. John 16, 32 through 33, this is Christ. He's talking to his disciples in this dissertation. He's telling them all this before he's going to be taken and crucified. And when that happens, you know, there is fear that is going to come upon every one of the disciples because they all at that point have a target on them. And so they're all afraid. And so he tells them, the hour cometh and is now come that you shall be scattered every man to his own and shall leave me alone. This fear that we said many of us have, being all by yourself. Jesus says, you guys are going to run and I'm going to be by myself. No man standing with me. He says, but yet I am not alone because the Father's with me. You know, every hero has got some sort of power, tools or some sort of strength or some sort of ability. And Christ said, this is something that I have with me always. It can't be taken. The Father is with me. And so I'm not actually by myself. I can face these things because my Father's with me. These things I've spoken unto you that you might have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. You know, he's telling them that I'm going to have this battle, this heroic battle, and I'm going to overcome it. This world is full of tribulation, these things that are concerning. So I have these thoughts I want to think about is, you know, what is it that makes a hero? We talked about it, a hero does these valorous acts. They do these things sometimes, it takes great sacrifice. And so thinking about it, and you know, one of the first things I think that has to make a hero is that a hero's got to know and be bound by rules. Bound by rules. And that's because someone who goes to take heroic action but doesn't have rules is actually not a hero, but a vigilante. And what's the difference between a hero and a vigilante? A vigilante is someone who acts outside of the rules. We hear things like vigilante justice. And there are places, you know, that some of our brothers are at right now where vigilante justice runs the countryside. They determine that, you know, Gordon did something to me and my family, and, you know, in Kenya, you get a handful of people together and say, yep, Gordon's a bad dude, and they all say, we agree, Gordon's a bad dude, and they can go and enact their justice on him. Maybe the accusation is something that seems egregious, terrible, but when they're not actually bound by a set of rules, they're not being a hero, but a vigilante. A vigilante acts outside of rules. They don't utilize systems or processes designed to give people fair representation and take actions often based on emotions. And the question I have is, how often have your emotions been correct? There's a problem there, right? And so a hero's got to know and has to be bound by rules. And Christ also was. This particular thought about being bound by rules, this is, I think, the last statement that I have that I've been really chewing on in these podcasts that I've been listening to. And he's talking about looking at the totality of the Bible and the Old Testament and the New Testament. And he makes this statement, I think is really interesting. He says, what's the relationship, the juxtaposition between the Old Testament and the New Testament? He says, the Old Testament is about learning self-discipline, not to get too bad out of control. When you've learned that, the New Testament allows you the freedom of expression and positive action. The Old Testament shows you that there are rules, complete with resulting consequences. This is why the Old Testament was never done away with. It was complete. It showed you the nature and character of God. It showed you that there are rules and there are limits, and you push them and there will be consequences. It's the story of mankind, the story of Israel, the story of Christians. And the Old Testament gives this picture of what God's expectations are. What are the rules? And what are the consequences, which can be bad, but also the blessings that come? And then the New Testament encourages action. It encourages evangelism. It encourages doing well to others. It encourages doing that, but only if you recognize the rules. And that's how you can act as a hero. Humans are always looking for a hero. We always are. This is what drives people to spend thousands of dollars on memorabilia. They buy a football jersey. They do all of these things. This is why there are movies and TVs and books every year focused around this idea. And there is a new concept that's been cropping up lately, which I think is really a statement about our time, where there are a lot of movies, TVs, and books and all that instead of focusing on the heroes, are focusing on the villains, which is a dangerous precedent, turning us away from the need we have for someone who overcomes evil. But there, you know, humans are always looking for it. That's why almost every show you watch, all of us are looking for a hero, looking for a hero. Rebecca and I, we watch The Great Food Truck Race because we're, you know, kind of foodies and all that. Oh, there's a hero story in all of that. And we're almost always looking for the underdog. You know, you have the group of people who they come, they've got a great concept, their marketing's not really great. We want them to win. The hero story's always there. Always there. And this is why celebrities are given a voice. People want to look towards somebody. Why we care what these celebrities think about politics or how we should raise our children, it blows my mind, except for the fact that humans are always looking for a hero. Always. This is why you walk through the grocery store to cash out and there's all these different stupid magazines there that, you know, this is what so-and-so is wearing. This is what they think, all that sort of stuff. Because we're looking for a hero. And people need a cause to be heroic towards. This sounds silly, but there is a huge, huge, huge group of people who are dedicated to building the best, fastest, most powerful Honda Civic. Do you realize this is a hero story? You take the lowest end, most economical vehicle, and you turn it into a powerhouse, overcoming all odds to have a 900 horsepower Honda Civic. People are looking for this. People need a cause to be heroic towards. This is they're looking for something that defies the expected. And this is, humans are always looking for, and we look to emulate heroes. We look to emulate heroes. You know, you watch kids on a basketball court or something, and someone's going to try to be that heroic person who hits the buzzer beater shot. How many basketball games have you watched where someone makes that last second three-pointer right at the end to win the big game? And you go out and you look at basketball courts, and kids are doing this over and over again. We want to emulate the hero. Halloween comes, they want to dress up, and we want to be Superman. We want to be Batman, whatever it is. Or a Batman, kind of a dark hero, right? Not necessarily motivated by all the right things. We look to emulate heroes. In fact, if you want to learn about heroes, Harvard has a class for you. You can go and you can take a class at Harvard. This already passed. It was in the fall semester. But it's called Superheroes and Power. And you can learn about superheroes, what makes them, what they mean, what the stories mean, all of that. We are looking for it. Humans need it. We're not going to read all this. You can look at it, but you can go look it up yourself. But we're called to be heroic. The last thing I said, humans need heroes, and we have this innate desire to emulate, to be like. And we are called to be like. Christ says, what kind of person should you be? Be like me. Heroic qualities. We're called to be heroic. It says, follow me and see the things you've seen me do. The things you've seen me do. Follow the pattern. Be heroic. Act in ways we're going to look at here in just a second. He says in John 13:15, I have shown you an example, and do as I've done to you. Follow me as your hero. Be like me. Do those things. And Christ says, the world's going to have tribulation, but I've overcome the world. Just overcome it. Overcome the world. Don't be like it. Don't let it beat you. But overcome the world. So I'm going to spend these next couple slides writing some things that if you're writing things down, and if anything about my message today is spurring thoughts in your heart, these are some of these things that's worth just thinking about, that there are heroic deeds of Christ that are to be emulated. And it's men, women, children, old folks, everybody. Some of these heroic deeds. We talked about being afraid of being alone. And you know, in Christ faced being alone. And in Mark chapter 1, in the story throughout all the Gospels, says, you know, this is, he went out in the wilderness. And if he was out there in the wilderness, my assumption is he was alone. But that wasn't the challenge. I mean, sure, he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and I'm sure that wasn't easy, right? But then after that, it says he was tempted of Satan, and he was all by himself. All by himself, facing a challenge, and there was nobody standing with him. And it was rapid fire. Oh, yeah, well, what about this? So, yeah, what about this? And he was all alone. All alone. You know, we look at that story. It's worth you going back. And he went back and said, well, you know, what do I have? Always have the Word of God. I have the presence of my Father. I can answer these things, you know, with the Lord, with the Spirit with him. And for you, as you're alone, physically alone, maybe you live by yourself and you don't like it. Maybe you wish you were in a relationship and you're not in one and you're troubled by it. Maybe when you're at work, you're all by yourself and you have all these things going on. You can be heroic, just as Christ. He let the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord, encourage him, strengthen him, bring him peace, help him to speak. And he was prepared for it. He made efforts to be prepared for it. Christ had fears about the future. In Luke 22:42-44, he's in the garden and he knows what's going to happen. And he says, if you be willing, remove this cup from me. I don't really want to do this. I don't want to go through this. I know it's in front of me. I know what it is, but I'm afraid of it. To the point that his father sent an angel to strengthen him. And Christ had fears of the prophesied future. But what did he do? He didn't cower. He faced them. He looked at what he was given, his Father who loves him, and strength to help him move forward, and he drew back on that. And this is worth emulating. As you think about and you look at what's going on in our world and everything and all the turmoil that's going on, fears about the future, what do? Well, we have to look to the Lord. We have to look to how we've been cared for in the past. We have to look for the times that we've seen God moving in our life. We have to look to those things. Right? That's what a hero does. You know, I mean, how many times in these hero stories are they there and they're almost finished? They're getting beaten into the ground and they have this backstory, this flashback to some important moment, some important memory, something like that, and it brings them strength to go forward. There's a reason those stories exist. And they're told over and over again. It's an archetype. It's the story of Christ for us to emulate. Christ faced down mobs of angry, violent, spiteful people that he never did anything against. Never did a thing. And there's tons of ones. I just picked this one. It says, this they said, they drew him there and they were tempting him, that they might have a reason to accuse him. It says, Jesus stooped down and wrote with his finger on the ground as though he heard them not. You know, they were looking, give me a reason to accuse you and have you killed. And he didn't run. He didn't run. He drew back to the word of his Father, and he gave answer. And this is difficult. You know, when you find yourself in life faced with people who are hostile or whatever it is, you know, can we overcome our human emotion? And we look at the rules, and the rules are is that, you know, be angry and sin not, right? That we heap fires of coal upon our enemies, that we do good to those who hate you and despitefully use you. You know, these heroic things. Christ was often inconvenienced by the needs of others, but still worked on their behalf. The story here that I have in Matthew, they had been busy all over the place. They've been everywhere. Everywhere they went, there were people who had needs and everything. And Christ, they looked, and the verse before that, you know, it says there that they didn't have time hardly even to eat. And so Christ said, well, let's go ahead and go somewhere. We can have a little bit of time, a little bit of peace. And they tried to go there, and the people followed them. And Christ said, well, I guess I don't get to rest today. And, you know, for those of you who haven't done this before, I know the brothers who are here who've been in the missionary field can tell you what this is like. When I went to Africa, Brian had a pretty stringent schedule for us. And we were going sometimes two, maybe three sometimes, locals in a day, traveling a long way, going, and you know, you go there and you go to this local, and of course you're expected to bring a message, so you're prepared to speak, but there's people beforehand who want to be administered to and all that. And as Jay and Gordon, some of you guys tell you, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And you get to the end of the day and you say, I just can't even deal with one more person who needs something, right? And, you know, Christ was inconvenienced by the needs of others. And inconvenience probably isn't the right word to use there. He had his own needs, but he still worked on their behalf. And this is the story of a hero, right? It's a self-sacrificial. And here we go. That Christ was willing to sacrifice. And sacrifice is not only of our life, as Christ did, but it's of our time. It's of our finances, right? Maybe it's of our sleep, right? We put off something, we forego something, we give up something important to us for some future thing, for some other purpose. Christ says here, behold, I came to the world to bring redemption unto the world, to save the world from sin. Therefore, whoso repenteth and cometh to the little child, him I will receive, for of such is the kingdom of God. But behold, for such I have laid down my life. So I gave up my life for those people who are willing to come to me. And I think there's important things to talk about when it comes to sacrifice. You know, sacrifice is giving up something of value to invest in the future, and sometimes the results of that are unknown. I'm getting ready to not tomorrow, but a week from that, I'm starting paramedic school. I'm still working on the truck, so I'll be working my regular 2-day shift, and then I've got 3 days a week, I'm going to be going to class. I'll have clinicals. I'll have all this sort of stuff. I'm going to be making some sacrifices to invest in the future, to be able to do more good for the people that I have the honor of serving, to do all of that. You know, I'm giving up some things to invest in the future. And the results are unknown. You know, and Christ sacrificed for us. In the end, he gave his life. He did all of these things. And the results of it toward you and I were uncertain. Would we accept his sacrifice? Would we be motivated by it? Would we change? Would we honor it? Would we rebel? But it was worth doing anyway. And any of these hero stories that you've seen and all that, you know, everybody didn't applaud the hero at the end. And most people didn't deserve the sacrifice the hero made, and yet the hero was motivated to do it anyway. This is important. Sacrifice is motivated by the hope of a result, and your life is a series of necessary sacrifices. So what is the most beneficial sacrifice you can make in order to obtain the most good? And it must be in following after Jesus Christ. And taking on the aspects that he has taught us that we can overcome the things of this world. And coming to a conclusion here, I just want us to remember these things that we are called to be. If you have accepted Jesus Christ, if you are baptized, if your life has been dedicated, you are supposed to be someone who is seen. A city on a hill, Christ says, and you know, being seen is an opportunity to act as Christ. This is an opportunity for you to show Christ within you. The salt of the earth. You are called to be the salt of the earth. It means you're needful and beneficial. Food without salt is terrible. Not enough salt in your diet, you're dehydrated. There are people around you who need you to act out the hero of Christ. They need you to say those things that are difficult to say but are right. There are people who will be encouraged by that. They need you to do that. And we're called here in the Sermon on the Mount, Christ says this, you're called to be a candle, a single candle. And if this room were completely dark, we black out the whole place and it was dark and you couldn't see, if I lit a single candle, within a couple minutes you could see everything in here. We're not called to be a bonfire, we're called to be a candle. To be a light in dark places. A single candle will light up this entire room. I want you to write this down. I want you to read this later. And you've heard this particular scripture reading many times. I'm not going to read it. But I just kind of summarized each of these verses and what Paul was telling, or the writer was telling the Romans there in each verse. As he's telling them, you know, to do as Christ did. And these are the attributes that you should look to emulate. He says, I want you to remember that you're part of Christ and each other. You're not a vigilante. You have a leader. You have those around you. You're not alone. Live like that. We have gifts and abilities given to us that we could utilize them. You have something that is of value to those who are around you. The next verse tells us that we're supposed to love each other without bias, to hate evil and adhere yourself to good things. You know, the hero story of Christ and of so many others isn't that they acted in this way full of valor and sacrifice because everybody liked them or wanted them to. They did it because they valued and loved that city, that country, all things. Adhere yourself to good things. Treat others well and put their needs before yours. Work as though you're working directly for Christ. You do that when you go to work. Work as if you're working directly for Christ. Be full of hope. Patient when you're having trouble, and rather than sitting and complaining about the situation you find yourself in, take it to God directly. Take it to God. Look to help those who are around you, pray for those who are against you, and let God change your heart toward them. Well, that's really what that thing that Christ is talking about when you pray for your enemies and those who despitefully use you. It's not necessarily to change them. It's how you look at it. Can you be filled with love for someone who has disdain for you? Not just someone who hates your existence, but someone who acts out against it. Boy, that's hard. That's difficult. About someone who has done terrible things to you. Man, that's hard. Learn to be sympathetic to those who are around you and be with them. You know, I really want to encourage us to focus on this year as this local. To mourn with the people who mourn and have joy with the people who have joy. That we are with those people and where they're at. I want to encourage us in this year. Recognize your weaknesses and let that change how you look at others. We read that here in Romans in this reading. Don't have a vengeful heart. Remember the rules of God says that He's going to take care of those things. Live in peace one with another, and don't let the bad things around you sway you towards evil. Every hero story, there is an opportunity for the hero to use the evil things around him to have some sort of a victory. As Christ was being tempted by Satan, it was offered him. I'll give you all these things. Here's your out. And it's easy when we are surrounded by difficulties and challenges to say, I just give up. I just give in. But I want you to remember that this isn't what we're called to do. I have one more thing I'm going to do, but that's my message for this morning. And I hope that in some way you've been encouraged by it as you think about these things. I'm tonight at 5:00, we're going to have a town hall. We're going to talk about our future. We're going to talk about our reunion coming up. We're going to talk about if I end up being elected as pastor again this next year, some things that Aaron and I have talked about that we want to try to do. We're looking at the future here. And I've been thinking a lot about that and thinking about what I want this year to look like. For me, it's going to be very busy. It's going to be very busy. But I'm excited about it. But as I'm looking forward, I think it's absolutely true that as we look forward, we also have to look back. And when I preached a couple weeks ago, I talked about that. And I talked about some of these blessings we've had in this last year. And I was just taken again by thinking about it. As I was working outside yesterday, cleaning up my yard and playing with my chickens and all that, just thinking about, when we entered into 2023, it was the same as when we're entering into 2024. What is going to happen this year? The future looks relatively bleak, and yet, we were blessed amazingly. And I laid out a list of things last time I preached, and so I'm not going to do it again. But as I'm thinking about it, I thought about a song, and I want to sing this song this morning. I'll put the words up here. You can sing it if you know it, or as you grab a hold of it. But there's a song. It's a beautiful song. It's by a singer called Zach Williams, and the song is called So Good to Me. And I can't tell you how many times I've driven to work and listened to this over and over again as I think about how good my job is, how good my life is, where the Lord's taken me, health and blessing and all of these things. I'm just so touched by how good the Lord is. And so I'm going to turn off this mic because it'll be...
Anybody know this song? A couple of us. Yeah, my kids do. So, I think my sister knows this song. So, I'll sing to you guys just the chorus here. I have the words. You'll figure out the tune a bit. You can join me if you want. But this is, I just want... I'm going in the next 2 weeks of working. So next two Sundays, I'm going to be at work. And so I'm going to miss the fellowship and the worship with you. So I'll do as I've done before and have you guys worship with me in song right now. But this is the way the chorus goes.
Can you turn the microphone towards you? I'm sorry.
And turn it towards me?
So the chorus is going to go like this.
How perfect are your ways, how endless is your grace forever. I will sing your
when daylight breaks with morning dew. You are so good to me. When evening comes, the day is through. You are so good to me. Your love is wild, your promise true. You are so good to me. Your heart is kind, all you do. You are so good to me. How perfect are your ways, how endless is your grace forever. I will sing your praise. You are so good to me.
I have to do it this low because it gets too high on the chorus if I don't.
When blessings come, when life brings pain, you are so good to me. When shadows fall, seasons change, you are so good to me. How perfect are your ways, how endless is your grace forever. I will sing your praise. You are so good to me. On heaven's shore, you call my name. You are so good to me. 1,000 tongues of angels sing. You are so good to me. How perfect are your ways, how endless is your grace forever. I will sing your praise. You are so good to me. You are so good to me. You are so good to me.
Thank you, guys. We will dispense with the closing song. I'll ask you to stand and we'll close in prayer.